So if you can remember, the last couple months you've been in this class and we've been talking about worldviews and we've went over several worldviews and we're kind of on our last couple worldviews. We had the skepticism worldviews in the 1600s and 1700s. We had scientism and empiricism come up. We had naturalism, nihilism with Nietzsche. In the 1800s, in the 1900s, we've had logical positivism, pragmatism, which we didn't talk about, existentialism, and now, finally, we are on postmodernism. This is the moment of the class. This is where the entire class has been leading. It's the climax of the show here. So be excited. You are at the best class in terms of content. All of these topics really have morphed and become postmodernism. So if you look at the diagram, just to bring to mind again this little train here that we've seen a couple times, but I just want to go over it one more time with you, that logical positivism turns into language games and structuralism and pragmatism, which we didn't talk about, which turns into postmodernism, which turns into relativism and pluralism. And also nihilism, it turns into existentialism, which turns into postmodernism, which again turns into relativism or pluralism. Either way, you get to relativism and pluralism. But if you go to the next page there, you can see this kind of bubble diagram where you have all these other things that help us to understand how postmodernism emerged. So at the top, you have a reaction to modernism. And then you also, there to the right, you have a reaction to structuralism. And then next to that, you have existentialism. And then below, you have linguistic philosophy. And to the left there, you have failure of logical positivism and verificationism. And then up above there, you have skepticism. All of these things are influencing and leading to postmodernism. Now, we've talked about a lot of these things, but tonight we're going to focus in on how postmodernism emerged out of a modernistic framework. And when we talk about modernism, we're talking about the period of the rational and empirical Enlightenment era in Western Europe. And so we haven't defined modernism, but all you can really all you need to know to think about modernism is just to think of it as the Enlightenment. That's just the easiest way to do it. The Enlightenment and the period before that, known as the Renaissance. So Renaissance, Enlightenment, you can just put those two together and you have what modernism is. Okay, so now, I just wanted to show you that diagram. I don't want to talk about it forever, but I just want to show it to you so you can get a sense of how varied postmodernism is because of its origins are kind of all over the place. And as you'll see in this outline, postmodernism takes on some of the roots of these previous worldviews. All right, so some of the popular sayings that we encounter on the street, and I'm sure Josh and Sarah have encountered on the college campus, go something like this. You may have heard these. It's all relative. So when talking about what people like and cultures and preferences, say for different sports or foods or flavors of ice cream, people say, it's all relative. You know, the Germans like soccer, so do the South Africans, and we like gridiron football, you know, that sort of thing. We like soccer too, but just not as much as they like soccer. You know, a lot of people in Italy, they like gelato. Well, we like, you know, frozen yogurt. Not so much the golden spoon, because now we have the other one, which is the new, what is it?
Yogurtland.
So, I mean, we're kind of over Golden Spoon. Now we need Yogurtland, right? It's all relative, though. 10 years ago, Golden Spoon, or maybe, what, 20 years ago, Golden Spoon was legit, right? But now it's all about Yogurtland. And so I just, you know, there's a place in Irvine around here by UCI. There's a Yogurtland, like, literally 100 feet from a Golden Spoon. And all the UCI students were at Yogurtland. It was packed, a line out the door. No one was at Golden Spoon. I mean, empty. It was amazing. So that's what we're talking about tonight. Isn't that exciting? Okay, so now how about this one? Nobody really has the truth. You've probably heard that before. Nobody really has the truth when people are talking about religions and world religions and things like that. Or how about this? There are no absolute truths. There are no absolute truths. Nobody really has the truth. Yeah, except for that statement. What about this one? What's true for you is true for you, and what is true for me is true for me. Have you heard that before? Yeah, I'm sure you guys have heard that on campus a lot, right? People should believe whatever they want, as long as it doesn't interfere with my freedom. With my freedom. We've heard that before. People need to be tolerant of other ideas. You've heard that before, I'm sure. People need to be tolerant of other ideas. So how should we understand these sayings and respond to them? What do we do with this? Well, these statements are hinting at something, all of them. What are they hinting at? What do you get when you read these statements? What are they asking about? Leave me alone. Non-committal. Nobody knows anything. Ultimate reality. Yeah, in a sense, ultimate reality. These statements are getting at truth. Truth. What is the nature of truth? This is how they morph in culture and they manifest. But in reality, people are dealing with and touching on the question, what is truth? These sayings allow us to bring up the question in the conversation, what is the nature of truth? That's what these sayings allow us to do. If we're keen, we can tap into this and say, okay, what are you really saying when you make that statement? What do you think about truth? That is an easy next question, and it gets a whole lot deeper at that point, doesn't it? So yes, these sayings are cultural, but they also bring up deeper metaphysical and epistemological issues. So who can tell me in a few words what metaphysics is? What is it? You create your own reality? In a sense, yeah, metaphysics has to do with that. Yeah, like, is there reality out there, or do I create it? Yeah, Sharon, right? Good to see you. So metaphysics deals with the question, what is real? What is real? What is reality itself? And epistemologically, we're talking about truth here. So when we're talking about epistemology, what are we asking? What sort of thing does epistemology tell us about? What is it?
Knowledge.
And what about knowledge?
How we know things.
Yes. How we know things. How we acquire knowledge. How do we acquire knowledge? Yeah. So when we're talking about the nature of truth, we're asking the question, what is reality and how do we know reality? What is reality and how do we know reality? And so, these sayings that we just went over are cultural in nature, but they're also philosophical. They're metaphysical and they're epistemological. And so when we're talking about how to respond to these sayings, we need to understand a certain philosophy that they're rooted in, and we call that philosophy postmodernism. Now, postmodernism is a cultural movement, as we'll talk about, but it's also a philosophical movement. Postmodernism has to do with the nature of truth. And where do we encounter this question in the Bible? Jesus. Pilate, come on now, talk to me. What happened?
Pilate says, what is the truth?
What is truth?
What
a question that was. So in John 18, he says, then Pilate said to him, you are a king. Jesus answered, you say that I am a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice. Pilate said to him, what is truth? What is truth? So this shouldn't surprise us, as Pilate was probably trained in classical Greek philosophy to have that high professional position he had in the Roman Empire. And so he probably grew up learning Plato, Aristotle, and all the other Greeks. And he probably had encountered this notion of a metaphysical and epistemological truth prior to ever meeting Jesus. And so what he's asking is a very deep philosophical question about truth. He's asking about the nature of truth. He's not just saying, what is the truth about you, Jesus? But what is truth in general and specifically about Jesus? So in the metaphysical sense, he's asking, does truth depend on human interests, like the mob chanting to crucify you? Is truth dependent on human interests, or is truth dependent or in an independent reality separate from human interests? Does truth stand apart from this mob? And is this something that I should tap into, this independent truth? Is truth in the general sense subjective or objective in nature? Okay, so specifically, is there any right or wrong answer to his choice regarding what to do with Jesus? If he decides to go with the mob, then he's saying they are defining the truth. If he decides to go with another alternative, he's saying, no, he's done nothing wrong. There's a higher level of justice that I'm appealing to. That justice is independent of this mob. I'm going to appeal to that and grant you your freedom. You are innocent. So what does he do? So he asks the question, what is truth? What is justice? What is ultimate reality? What do I appeal to make this decision? Is there such a thing as objective truth out there? Or is there only subjective truth that subcultures create? So he's also asking, how can we know truth? How do we know truth? The epistemological question. Is truth such a thing we can know? Can we access truth? Is it accessible to us as humans? Or are we completely taken away from truth itself, and we're stuck behind something, and we can't actually access truth? Can we grasp the truth as humans, as Christians? So these are some of the themes tonight that we're talking about. You know, interestingly on this, Jesus happened to give incredible insight into this question prior to his meeting Pilate. He said to his disciples, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And he taught us that he himself is the truth, and that we may know truth through him. So Jesus is actually answering this question in the metaphysical sense and the epistemological sense a couple chapters before. He is saying that ultimately the way to the most purest reality is through him. So he's saying, I am the truth and I am the way. So I am the way to access the truth. I am the epistemological answer, and I'm also the metaphysical answer. I am the truth itself. Independent of whoever's thinking about it, I am that reality. I am the reality. And you can only get to the reality through me. I am the way, the epistemological in the epistemological sense, and I am the truth in the metaphysical sense. So he himself reveals truth to us, and he himself is perfect truth. So when we talk about God in seminary, we talk about his being and his attributes, his necessary attributes and his secondary attributes, and we say that being is not an attribute itself, it's his essence. So when he says, I am truth, he's saying, I am reality itself. I am perfect being. You are the derivation of my perfect being. My reality is ultimate. It is the basis. It's the foundation. When we talked about foundationalism, we're talking about where truth resides. Ultimately. Is there an ultimate truth in the universe? Jesus says, I am that. I am that ultimate truth. No culture creates anything remotely close to what I am in my essence. So Jesus appeals to us as humans and in a very accessible manner. Epistemologically, he makes himself known to us. So, in our conversations with people, like Josh and Sarah have all the time, every day, we can bring up truth. We can bring up truth. Why do we want to bring up truth? The truth sets people free. The truth, he says, the truth will set you free, right? So we want to get to truth in our conversations as quickly as possible. So we want to bring down the walls, again, of their false worldviews using some of the tools of this class so that truth can rise and become very appealing. So as we do, we reveal Jesus, the ultimate truth. And that's what we're about in this class. So ultimately, we want Jesus to be revealed in our conversations because he is the ultimate truth. And to answer Pilate's question, if Jesus were to have responded, he would have said, I am the truth. He would have said, what is truth? I am truth itself. But he didn't say that. He told the disciples before. So yes, Jesus himself is the mind-independent ultimate reality that we bump into in this world. We bump into truth, and when we do so, we bump into what he has created to be reality, the truth that derives from his perfect being. So if you think about it, all reality, all being outside of his being is just the derivation of his being. The whole universe, including us. So we want to bump into truth as much as possible, and we want to show others and let others bump into it too. And sometimes it hurts when other people bump into it. So hopefully in our conversations, we want to help them bump into it not so hard. You know, so that's when we have to be using our tactics, like Greg Kokel taught us, which is in one of the first outlines. If you haven't done your reading, go back to that. So now, interestingly here, culturally, we are facing something that we as Christians have never faced before. We're back to your outline here. A rejection of such an ultimate truth. There is a standard rejection that we encounter on the street of such an ultimate truth. And postmoderns reject the hint of the idea of one ultimate truth, whether religion or politics, to rule them all. Whatever it is, they reject one truth to rule them all. They reject that whole idea. And they can't stand the thought of someone claiming that there is only one truth and only one way to understand reality. They don't like that. It doesn't sit well with them. So we can all probably agree that there is a sense of awkwardness when talking to certain postmodern types if we don't have a good conversation leading up to this moment. When we start talking about Jesus being the way to get to the truth himself, there's a bit of a sense of animosity, excuse me, or intolerance when we encounter postmoderns and this issue comes up. There is growing frustration among postmoderns regarding the truths that Christians claim applies to all peoples in all places, at all times. The postmodern types that we encounter get very frustrated at this. And the postmoderns react very strongly to Christians because allegedly they say this about us: Christians overemphasize universal truth and dogma. They're used to hearing us say, this is the way it is from the pulpit, pounding on the pulpit and saying, there is no other way. Take that. You know, yelling and screaming, especially like our friends do on TV, you know, and there's a lot of intimidation that happens from the pulpit sometimes, not just on TV, but in many churches. I'm not saying I don't get excited if I'm preaching a message, but sometimes for the postmodern types, it just doesn't work for them. They need a little something different. So they want us to kind of tone that down a little bit and stop talking about such dogmatic claims to ultimate truth. And they say that Christians restrict asking questions or challenging the establishment. They think we try to keep everyone at a distance and not allow other people to bring their understandings of God into Christianity. So they think that Christianity is just limited and limiting others who have a, slightly different view of God. They say that's heretical. Christians call that heresy. And they find that word heresy to be, oh my God, that's such an insulting word. How can you call me a heretic? You're going to burn me at the stake too? You're going to stone me? What kind of Christian are you to use that word? Christians claim certainty of truth. This is something that really bothers them. This certainty is repulsive to the postmodern type. Because certainty segregates people that know from people that don't know. It creates this divide. Christians tend to then come across to them so divisively that we're all about just separating. Postmoderns claim that no truth can be known with certainty. And so when we say that we have certainty with our truth, or some level of certainty, not 100% certainty, but some level of certainty, they get really frustrated at that. They also say that the Bible depicts God as rigid and controlling. And so this is very unattractive to the postmodernist who thinks God, or some higher power that's up there, should let all people into heaven or nirvana, no matter where they come from or when they come from, in terms of the history of the world. So postmoderns are very strong critics of any knowledge system, like Christianity or the Christian truth claims, that is exclusive and claims to have an independent objective truth that actually correctly describes reality. So anytime we, as Christians, go around and we say, we have the truth, our truth is the right truth, and our truth correctly describes reality and history and how the universe began and this Jesus figure, the way we describe it is the right way and your way is the wrong way. They get really frustrated at this. This is not a good way to have a good apologetics evangelistic conversation. Right, Josh? Right, Sarah? So by going out and saying that, we're going to make enemies real quick. Now, it may be true of us that we say, or it is true of us that we say, our truth is the right truth. Jesus is the only way. He is the only truth. There is no other God. Every other depiction of God is not describing the real God that actually is there. So this is a very challenging cultural setting that we're in right now. It's a very hard moment in the history of evangelism. And in a couple weeks, we are going to be learning about this idea of Jesus the only way. We're going to be joined by Andy, who is a teacher here at a nearby Lutheran academy. And Andy actually has joined us tonight. Andy, can you raise your hand real quick? All right. So Andy, he's not an atheist. He actually is working with high schoolers right now, and he has a great background in apologetics, and he's recently wrote a book geared perfectly for the college student and for the high school student, and he'll talk about that, and he'll talk about pluralism in a couple weeks from now. So be encouraged about that, because that's going to be an exciting time, because one of the major issues that we encounter, I think you guys will agree, is how Jesus could be the only way to heaven, or the only way to God, you know, and Yahweh is the only God. So this is a very touchy subject, and we find it all over the place. So tonight with the rest of the time that we have, we're going to get into defining postmodernism. We're going to, I don't think we'll have time to look at where the views come from, philosophically speaking. We won't have time to get into some of these major thinkers, Michel Foucault, Jacques Derrida, and Jean Lyotard. I can't say his whole name. There's something in between there. These three French guys are very important in understanding postmodernism, just like the Germans and the French are important in understanding existentialism and nihilism. So we won't have time to get into that, and we'll maybe touch on them next week. But next week, we're going to talk about the criticisms of postmodernism, and hopefully we'll start to get into the criticisms of relativism. Relativism is kind of more of a effect, you know, kind of the like if postmodernism is the cause, relativism is kind of the effect. So it doesn't require a lot of history to understand relativism, but we'll try to beat up relativism next week when we beat up postmodernism. So tonight I'm going to leave you hanging at the end of the class with all of this postmodernist stuff, and you're going to be thinking about postmodernism for the next week. Don't feel like I'm teaching postmodernism for you to adopt, but I have to leave you hanging just for the sake of time. It's just too big of a topic for us to beat it up in the same class where we introduce what it is. So overall, we see that postmodernism, this is our goal. Overall, we will see that postmodernism ought to be rejected because it is an unsound system of thought that dismisses objective truth and our ability to know objective truth. So we're going to realize that next week as a whole here when putting these two classes together. Now, with that in mind, you've already been sitting for about an hour, so I know we're only about a half an hour into this and just starting to scratch the surface, but I'd love to take the break now, if that's okay with you, and just kind of mingle and chat, and we'll come back, and if you don't mind, we'll probably go to around 8:45, maybe 9. We'll try to finish up there. So if you can, let's take just a 5 or 10 minute break, stretch, get something to drink, and we'll be right back. All right, so let's get into this here. I have to go through my notes to get back to where we were. Okay, what is postmodernism? What the heck is this thing? So many argue that right now we are living in a postmodern world. We are living in a postmodern world. The problem is many of us don't realize we're living in a postmodern world, and we have no idea what postmodernism is or what this word just is about. So if you ask a postmodern person, hey, why are you a postmodernist? They're going to say, what the heck are you talking about? So it's a cultural phenomena that we find and that we find ourselves in, but it's something very hard to define. And the reason why it's hard to define is that those who are in the current academic community who are talking about postmodernism and writing about it have varying definitions of it. So you can't really nail a definition down because people differ who are philosophy professors, let's say. The other reason why it's hard to define is because the actual people who started to espouse these postmodern ideas 50 years ago, these French guys like I was telling you about, they have very varied views. Their views are very different from one another. So it's hard to capture the heart of postmodernism when you're reading the postmodern thinkers. The other reason it's hard to define is that it's more of a view that rejects certain ideas than it is a view that builds up a philosophy about reality, let's say. So as we said earlier, postmodernism has to do with truth. So a way to understand postmodernism could go something like this. Postmodernism is a diverse philosophical and cultural movement that responds to and revises themes of modernism. It rejects objective truth and rejects the idea that we can know objective truth concerning specific categories of reality. So some postmoderns will not say that reality doesn't exist. They will agree reality exists. It's just that certain parts of reality, certain categories of reality, we cannot know objectively what's in those categories, and there is no objective truth in those categories. So it's a diverse philosophical and cultural movement that responds to and revises themes of modernism, and it rejects objective truth and rejects the idea that we can know objective truth concerning specific categories of reality. So metaphysically speaking, again, no objective truth exists. And epistemologically speaking, we can't know objective truth even if it did exist. So we can't know it if it did exist, and metaphysically speaking, it doesn't exist in these categories. And we'll talk about those things in a moment. So what is the thing we call truth according to postmodernism? So when we think back to existentialism a couple weeks ago, we said that subjective meaning is created because there is no objective meaning. Do you remember that? So you create your own meaning. You create meaning in the universe because nihilism has told us that there is no ultimate or objective meaning out there. But postmodernism says it something a little different. It says subjective truth is created because there is no objective truth, and objective truth is unknowable. So postmodernism is kind of like existentialism in that sense. Subjective truth is created because there is no objective truth out there. Okay? So similar. So with this very short description or definition in mind, let's consider some of the key features of postmodernism, and then we'll be done with the class tonight, actually. So we're going to just talk about the key features of postmodernism, and that will help us understand what it is better. So in this little table I've given you, postmodernism rejects on one side, and postmodernism embraces on the other side. Now, let's talk about the one on the left, and then we'll go to the one on the right. So realism is something that classical Christians or non-Christians prior to postmodernism would have adopted. People would call themselves realist, unless you're a philosopher like Hume or Kant or some of these other guys. It's hard to say that they're realists because the idea is that they're saying that we don't access objective reality and it's not really there. So in a sense, Hume and Kant are kind of postmodern, even though they lived a couple years before this movement. But for everybody else besides those guys, people were realists, and Christians are realists. That's a view we adopt. Remember, we talked about how this is the heart of Christianity is a realist understanding and a foundationalist understanding. So if you look at postmodernism, this view embraces anti-realism. Okay, so we're going to talk about all the things on the right in a moment. We're going to break down all the things on the right after we finish this table. So on the left, you have foundationalism. Again, the heart of Christianity and classical understanding of the universe. And then on the left, or on the right, you have anti-foundationalism. So a complete rejection of foundationalism. On the left, you have this thing called the correspondence view of truth, or the correspondence theory of truth. On the right, you have the coherence theory of truth. That is what postmodernism embraces, a coherence theory of truth. We're going to talk about these again in a moment. Postmodernism rejects ultimate, objective, universal truths. And postmodernism embraces socially constructed subjective truths. Okay? Postmodernism rejects language is no big deal. Let me take this back here. Hold on a second. Postmodernism rejects the idea that language is no big deal. Language is just what we use to speak. It's not a big deal. We just talk using a language. But postmodernism embraces the idea that we are stuck inside of language. So language all of a sudden is a big deal. It's such a big deal that we're stuck inside of it. Postmodernism rejects meta-narratives. We're going to talk about that in a moment. And postmodernism embraces local narratives. Postmodernism rejects a God's eye view of things. Postmodernism embraces no God's eye view of things. Nobody has a God's eye view of things. Postmodernism rejects universal transcultural standards, things true across cultures. Postmodernism embraces only local cultural standards. And postmodernism rejects authorial meaning in text, meaning that the author's meaning is the actual meaning of the text. And postmodernism embraces reader meaning in text. So we'll talk about that in a second before we get into it. These are really cool ideas to talk about, but very bad ideas to adopt, hopefully, as you'll see next week. So anti-realism. We're talking about anti-realism. So anti-realism is the idea that is against realism, obviously. And postmodernism rejects metaphysical realism, the idea that objective reality is really there. They reject that idea in terms of certain categories of reality. Postmodernism rejects the existence of an independent reality. If you're a hardcore postmodernist, you're going to reject the idea that that reality is actually there. Postmodernism rejects a theory-independent or language-independent reality. They reject these ideas because they say that reality is theory-dependent. Reality is language-dependent. Okay, so we're going to get into what that means in a moment. Postmodernism rejects that there's only one way the world is. They don't like it when we say that. They don't like the classical understanding that there is only one way the world is. Okay, so in a metaphysical sense, postmodernism rejects realism. In the epistemological sense, they say that they reject epistemological realism, that objective truth about reality is knowable. So the postmodernist claims that objective truth about reality is unknowable. We cannot know reality as it really is. So we have no way of getting at it. Objective truth is a useless notion, and it can be forgotten about, because we can't access objective reality itself, so just forget about it. So it's a useless notion. Don't even talk about objective reality or objective truths. Postmodernism rejects, we're in anti-foundationalism now. Postmodernism rejects that there is a foundation to our knowledge structure that does not require a further foundation. So remember when we were talking about a skyscraper of knowledge with Descartes? Do you remember one of the first weeks of the class? We talked about René Descartes and his rationalism and how he wanted to build an ultimate or get to the ultimate foundation of knowledge by tearing down the skyscraper of knowledge. He wanted to get to these foundations. I work as a structural engineer, but you know, you'll have to just go with this for now. So Descartes, he wanted to tear this knowledge structure down so he can get at these, because he wanted to know the ultimate truth, just like we talked about God being the ultimate truth and the source of all truth. That's what Descartes wanted to get to, the certain foundation, which he said, I think, therefore I am, right? So what we're saying here is that postmodernism rejects such a foundation. It rejects foundationalism. It's anti-foundational. And as we will see, it gives us another way to understand a knowledge structure. We'll see that in a moment. I've got to square off my footings. Sorry. This is just bad. But you get the idea. So they want to reject this completely. They want to get rid of these. And once you do that, your entire knowledge structure collapses because it has no foundation. So they're anti-foundationalists. They say that you cannot build a knowledge structure on a certain foundation because no such foundation for knowledge is actually out there. Any foundation is just something you made up. So the coherence theory of truth, let's talk about that. When we're talking about what is the alternative for the postmodernist, if they get rid of this knowledge structure, you know, we have a lot of skyscrapers that have come up in the last 100 years, so it's kind of the age of the skyscraper in terms of architecture and ingenuity and developments. So what about knowledge? Well, what is this the age of? Well, this is no longer the age of a modernist understanding of knowledge, they say. It's an age of the postmodern understanding of knowledge. And the idea with that is that our belief system or our knowledge structure prior to postmodernism, we called these things knowledge structure. Let's just put one big fat mat foundation under there. So prior to that, or prior to postmodernism, this is how we think about our knowledge. It's a structure. It's built on a foundation. But for postmodernism, it's just this web of beliefs that intersect and flow together. It's just this spider web of ideas. And once you are part of this web of ideas, then you could engage and speak the language of the culture. So let's just say that's a spider web. So the idea with postmodernism is this is really what knowledge is like. It's no longer like this. It's kind of like, it's more like this. So they call this this web of ideas, the coherence theory of truth. So they say that if you can, if you have a belief system in your culture, you have a web of coherence. Okay, so they say a belief is true if it coheres with the other beliefs in the system. So a belief is true if it is part of the web. If it's not part of the web, it's not true. It has to be in the web or it's not a truth. So your idea stays an idea and it's not truth unless it fits in the web. And the web is a coherent web. It's consistent within itself. All of these ideas relate to the other. We can get to one idea over here from being over here. They go together. They fit together. They're consistent. They're coherent. They're a web. They're interconnected. They're integrated. So truth is only what is consistent with our current truth system or truth web. So what is true has to be consistent with the current truth web. So truth is a big web of interwoven individual strands of beliefs that all cohere with one another, according to the postmodernist. Truth depends on one's culture's pre-existing web of coherence. So if a new idea is brought up in a culture, it must be put to the coherence test. If it doesn't cohere, it must be discarded. If it doesn't stick, you have to throw it out. This is a system. It's a holistic system. And it defines truth. And so it has to be consistent, it has to be integratable, and it has to cohere. It has to pass the coherence test. And then when it does, it becomes another strand on the system. So if someone says the Big Bang is the way reality is, okay, then we have another sense of naturalism telling us about how the universe was created. So now the Big Bang strand fits within our current web of naturalism. Okay, so this is a cultural web of ideas. It's a pre-existing thing, and when you bring up a new idea, it could get rejected by your culture, or it could get accepted. If it gets accepted, it just becomes another strand in the web. So what is in the truth web depends on or is relative to one's culture's current web of coherence. What is in the truth web depends on or is relative to one's culture's current web of coherence. So key in on the word relative. It will be important. It's all relative. Remember that? This is the idea. One culture's web may differ from another culture. Canada may have a very different web than America in terms of our web of knowledge. Okay, so socially constructed subjective truths is the other key component of postmodernism. Socially constructed subjective truths. So truth, in this sense, is created by humans. It is socially constructed. We, as a social group, as a subculture, or a culture at large, we create truth. Now, as Wilton brought up, is that really truth, or is it just a belief? We talked about this at the break. So, they say it's truth, that this is what truth is. So they're using the word truth when they are talking about it this way. Truth is created by humans, as it is socially constructed. So it's our social setting that sets the stage for us to create truth. The setting is a play. It takes place in 2014, Irvine, and we are all actors in it. There's a stage behind us, and we get on the stage, or there's a bunch of props behind us. We get on the stage, and we act out this play. In that sense, we create, and there, by the way, there's no script to the play. We create the play. We create the script as we speak, as we move, as we dance, as we talk, as we sing. We are the actors creating the play as we go. We construct it in that sense. We speak it into existence. We are truth creators, not God. We are. So our social interactions in this play setting, in our subculture, reveal the truth that is already adopted in the web of coherence. We are just speaking out these ideas that the stage and the props on the stage inform us about. We are just given a voice to them, but the stage is already set. The props are already there. Our social interactions enable more truth to emerge. So it's all about how we say things, how we do things on this stage in this play. The language that we use in the play, the things we say, are we using ghetto slang? Or are we speaking only in German? You know, what sort of language are we using? Are we talking like crazy academic philosophers or lawyers or politicians? What play are we creating? That language of that community that we are trying to exemplify creates truth. That's the idea. So we make our own social world by using language to speak out these ideas. And each community constructs their world by their language. So, oh no. I knew that was going to happen. I just didn't plug in at the break because Wilton was distracting me. Ooh. Ouch. It'll turn on quick though because it's Windows. How many Android users we have here? One, two, there. How many Apple? Oh, two-thirds. How many Windows? Well, Windows Phone. One Windows Phone? What's that? Oh, look at that. Oh, I love that. Hey, can I see this? Can I see this for a second? Hey, guys, look at this. A new phone. It's so small. Okay, we're back on. Okay, so you guys are so much fun. Okay, so our language about reality, our talking about reality, defines the contours of reality for our subculture as we talk about it. We are painting, essentially, our world. We are defining the contours of our existence by using language. So we make our worlds by how we talk. So one philosopher says it this way, language does not represent reality, it constitutes reality. So Christians, we can recognize this and it resonates with us. We say fun things like words like backsliding. We don't mean sliding down a slide on our back. We mean something very different. We say things like quiet time, right? You know, these words. We say things like accountability time. Or what about this? The posture. What posture do we have right now in this church service or setting? How about this? Why don't you just ask Jesus for a wife? Holy. I mean, who says that, you know? All in his time. Or tell the truth, shame the devil. You know, something like that. Or what does this this is the one I hate the most. What does this passage mean to you? That is just the worst question. If you are a Bible study leader and you've said that, let's talk. Because there are better ways. He's under the weather? Yeah. Or when you're talking about someone being sick? Yeah. Yeah, these little sayings that we use, you know, it just kind of paints the picture of what kind of culture we live in. You know, is it a gentle world or is it a harsh world? And we, depending on how we phrase things, we create that reality. If you have any time and you like to mess around on YouTube videos, which I don't have a lot of time and I don't really enjoy, but there's this funny thing. It says stuff Christians say. If you go to YouTube and type that in, and there's these little like few minute videos, and there's these guys just making fun of like the lingo that we use as Christians, because it's just so like, it's just this subculture that we create, you know, that we say that. Yeah, amen, brother. Yeah, right. And so, praise God, you know, like we walk around saying praise God, you know. So, I mean, these are great. These are great. It's just kind of funny when you take a step back and say, wow, you know, these are very much, these are words very much used only in this subculture. So, according to postmoderns, these words shape our reality. They shape our subculture. And if we're not using the language correctly, if someone says, oh, my brother just died, and we say, praise God, you know, our subculture is going to correct us. They're going to be like, no, man, you're twisting the strand. This is not right. The strand goes that way. You know, it's the culture will correct us because language, it constitutes reality as the according to the postmodernist. So language also informs us about reality. So in order to understand a particular community, we have to learn the language. So in order to understand a lot of things that happen at certain church services on any given Sunday morning, we have to learn the language of that church. So if you got a bunch of people standing up shouting at Bishop T.D. Jakes in their church service, and they're pumping their fist and they're yelling things at T.D. Jakes passionately, angrily, but they're really just excited. It just looks like anger and passion to us. Like, come on now, you go, you know, you get out of here, you know, you're too much. You're step there, cool off, you know, something crazy like, you know, just being wild or whatever. It's like some people cheering, of course, but in order to understand that culture, we need to understand the language. We need to understand the language. So that is what the postmodernist is saying, that Christians have adopted the story. We've adopted a story about reality. We think that our story is true and everyone else's story is false. But in reality, it's just a narrative. And in our story, we use certain types of language, this lingo, to help tell the story and describe the reality. And when we keep describing the reality to other Christians, they pick up the story and use that lingo again and keep the story going. And over time, we keep embellishing the story and we keep telling the story differently. And ultimately, we keep recreating and recreating reality as we speak it. And our story is obviously the story of Jesus and God, creation, redemption, all that. But it's our community's story, according to the postmodern. It's our story, and it doesn't apply outside of our community. So it's interesting to think of it that way. And some churches have adopted this lingo of story, and all the while they don't realize they're picking up on these postmodern notions that have really bad roots and effects. Truth, back to your outline, truth is then dependent, and truth here is with a lowercase t. So if I'm talking about objective truth, I'm using an uppercase t. So when you see lowercase t truth, you can kind of think of it as truth in quotes, like more of a belief rather than objective real truth. So truth is then dependent on the language of our subculture. So one commentator says, we do not come to know the world by perceiving it, by direct acquaintance, but we come to know the world as we learn to use our language. So the common notion that you may have heard, perception is reality. You know, you may have heard that when people are talking about marketing and things. Perception is reality. In the postmodern sense, they would say something like this. Language is reality. So it's not what you present to the public that becomes reality for the public. It's how you speak to the public that becomes reality to the public. What words you use, what language you use. And the reason why they have this high view of language is because they say that we are stuck inside of language. We are stuck inside of language. So if you remember back in the first couple weeks of the class, I drew this little diagram of this stick figure behind a wall. And Hume was saying that we don't have access to objective reality. Let's call it objective truth. We don't have access to this, according to Hume, because we're stuck behind a wall of skepticism. You remember skepticism? It comes up again here. We really can't trust our senses, our intellect, our rationality to help us understand objective truth. We are stuck behind a wall. What is the wall for the postmodern? It's language. We are stuck behind language. We cannot see the world as it is because we only see through our language. So we all have this lens, these glasses, you know, Google glasses. You know, I think on the Google glasses, they have like a little window that tells you about something. I think if you click a button and it searches Google or something, and I think it does this, right? And we have the same kind of thing. We have these glasses we put on, and they have a certain color to the lens. They have a certain grid. They have a certain angle to the shape of the lens, so things appear more slender or fatter depending on the lens. So this language interpretation grid glasses, if you will, is what we use to receive reality and then construct reality. So everything has to pass through this grid that we have, this cultural, subcultural grid. And the grid is a language grid. So we are stuck behind these language lenses, if you will. And we can't know reality as it really is because we have our glasses on. And we can't take our glasses off. So in a sense, our wall is just our glasses. So these are Google glasses, whatever they are, Google frame, whatever it is. So, yes, sir.
What I'm hearing is that we as human beings can't see anything until we first create a metaphor for it.
Yeah, that's the idea, yeah.
So if that's the case, then we're looking at a collective metaphor for an understanding.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. I mean, the idea is that there is a collective story that we inherit when we're born, whether we like it or not, and we all grow up with it. We cannot think differently. Here's a good example. If you grew up in, say, Missouri, and St. Louis, good American town, right? And you grew up saying that America is the greatest country on the planet. We have done great with the world, we have a great constitution, a great democracy, you know, all this stuff. And you are super patriotic. You're the most patriotic kid ever. Why? It's because you grew up in St. Louis, middle of America, and you see the world through the patriotic lens that you inherited from your subculture of middle America. But if you grew up in Venezuela, and under Hugo Chavez, who just passed away, I don't know if good thing or bad thing, and you grew up in a drug-infested area, and the cartel was boss in your town, and you had this anger towards America, President Bush in particular, based on the rhetoric of Chavez, and you thought when he stood at the UN council a few years back when Bush was president and he told the world that Bush was the devil, you thought that he was doing the world a favor by saying, hey, this is a devil, everyone. Beware of this guy Bush. And you grew up in that kind of environment, then you would hate America and you would feel justified in doing so because of that lens that you inherited. And you, according to the postmodern, you cannot take off your glasses. You see the world that way because it's the world that you grew up in. Those ideas of hatred towards America and, you know, all these other things, the cartel is actually a good sort of entity and establishment in your community because they bring safety, They bring presents to your mom on her birthday, you know, something like that. You have a good idea, a good view of the drug cartel. You know, this is your web of coherent ideas. It all fits together. So that's the idea with postmodernism, is they say that there is no thinking that occurs outside of your language web, your knowledge web. One can't even think without it. You can't see the world any differently. So continuing on here, language is the grid or filter that stands between us and objective reality. And there is no essence or nature to language. There are just many languages. There's no essence to a language. We just all speak different languages because we're all in different cultures. And when I say languages, I don't mean actual languages. I mean just this idea of the web of coherence, the lingo that we use.
Culture,
yeah. So they say that we cannot use language to get outside of language. We are just stuck behind our language. There's nothing we can do about it. And we'll just keep going down here. If you go down to... Okay, let's just go down to 6, local narratives. So local narratives. So they up in the table we said postmodernism rejects the idea of meta-narrative. So they say that all that is really out there, or all that we can make sense of and understand, are local narratives. So what's a meta-narrative? Well, a meta-narrative is a way to understand the world from start to finish. It's how the world began and how the world will end, and everything in between. And that narrative, that story, is an overarching story that encompasses all things, all history, all meaning, all truth, all reality, everything. So when someone says, when someone has a story about all of reality, history, past, and future, they have a meta-narrative. And the postmodernist says, there are no meta-narratives. And those that continue to espouse their meta-narratives and convince others of their meta-narratives are doing violence to people. They say that that is a violent activity. When Campus Crusade is trying to win souls? Conquer lands like the Crusades back in 1,000 years ago? I mean, this is terrible. Why would you Christians want to do a crusade? You know, no one wants to die with the wrath of your meta-narrative. You know, so this idea is very important to the postmodern. They say, no, Christian, you have a local narrative. You have a story, and I have a story too, and my story tells me that your story is wrong. So thanks for telling me your narrative, but you can just go on now. So this is the cultural setting that we're in. They wholeheartedly reject the idea of our meta-narrative. And so they say the way we see the world is defined by our culture's story. We are raised with this particular story of ourselves, and we see the world through this story. So again, we are characters in the story. We are actors in the play. This is the story of reality that we are telling as we live. And it's guided, again, by the props and the setting on the stage. So they say that there are as many realities as there are communities. Excuse me. So if there are, let's say, 10,000 communities on the planet, subcultures, if you will, then there are 10,000 realities. Everybody's reality is okay for that setting. No culture should look at another culture and say that that other culture's reality is wrong. How could you? You're in your own narrative. You're in your own story. How could you look at this other culture and say it doesn't have the right story? And people do this all the time. We have this chronological arrogance to us where we say that these primitive cultures, you know, were bad cultures. You know, the Egyptians, this primitive culture, you know, something like this. The people in the jungles in say Ecuador or whatever, these primitive cultures, they're still primitive. You know, but to use the word primitive to describe them, that's so arrogant of you, you modernist Christian. How can you want to go convert the people in the jungles? Why don't you just let them have their community the way they want to? They can be cannibals if they want, they can burn their children if they want. You know, just let them be. So the idea is that no one story is the right story. There are as many realities as there are communities. Nobody has a right, and no one can judge another, because we're all just stuck inside our own language and our own narrative. Seven, and we'll finish this up. I think we only have a couple more here. No God's eye view of things. There is no transcultural intellectual vantage point. So nobody has the right setting on the top of the right mountain to see every culture correctly. We all have different vantage points when we look across the world. No one has a God's eye view of things. Only God does, if there is such a God. No, according to the postmodern. Nobody or no culture has the right and true perspective. No one has a God's eye view of things. One language is just one's perspective of the world. The way one culture uses a language is just how they use it. It's just part of their perspective. No one has the right perspective, and no one can judge another. The postmodernist contends that we have to get rid of the need for extending the linguistically formed world we live in to the rest of creation. We have to let go of that. Not just Christians, but everybody else. We have to stop doing that sort of stuff. Because once we start trying to take our language and apply it to another culture and another culture across the world, and take our narrative and apply it to another culture, we are doing violence. And Foucault talks about this, the will to power. You know, Nietzsche did too. But that's the idea, is that modernism brings violence. And they talk, these postmodernists, they talk about violence in their writings a lot. And then eight, only local cultural standards. So the laws of logic are just Western language games. So they say that there are no transcultural standards. There's no cultural standards like killing babies for the fun of it is wrong across cultures. They say that that universal truth is not a universal truth. It's just a local standard. You can't take that and swipe it across all cultures and have it stick. And also, the laws of logic are just Western language games. Language games. The way we all play a game when we're on stage acting out the play. We're just messing around when we're using our language. We're all playing a game. So the idea is that when you try to convince me of something, you're just playing chess with me and I have to outsmart you. But it's just a game. And they say the laws of logic aren't just these things that we bump into in reality, but these are just games. They're just ways we talk to each other to try to gain ground on the other person to win the game that we're all playing as we act out this play. The laws of logic, can you imagine? So the laws of logic have been around forever. I mean, they're not something men have created. We've discovered them. The law of non-contradiction, the law of excluded middle. These laws of logic that cannot be denied. No one can defeat these things. They are real. They're part of reality. They're furniture of reality. They say that furniture of reality, it's really not furniture. It's just a game we're playing. And that is just amazing. So, and then lastly, instead of the author providing the meaning for a text, say, for instance, the Bible, Moses writing something in the Torah, John writing about Jesus, not just biblical things, but let's just take the Bible for example. These meanings, these intentions of the author when he's penning it, the thing he has in his mind as he writes, that idea that he's trying to describe, that is not something that we can ever access, that intention, that idea in his head. All we can do is read the text. And when we read it, we then put meaning there. We read meaning into the text. So the postmodernist says that all we have is reader meanings. We never have the authorial meaning of the text. So the meaning of a written text is derived not from the author's intent and context, but from the reader's intent and context. So the actual meaning of the writing is what you or I make of it. So we supply the meaning. We supply the truth when we read it. So if you read Moses' Ten Commandments, and you read that, or the Ten Commandments God gave Moses, and you read that, and you say, I think this means killing babies for the fun of it is okay. And you go do that. I mean, that's okay in a postmodern setting because you have no access to objective truth, which is the author's original intention. You cannot access the author's understanding when he wrote it. So because you can't access it, you have to supply your own understanding. So this is very bad news. It's a very bad worldview, but it is the worldview that we deal with. Now, again, postmodernism is a cultural phenomena. It's a philosophical phenomena, and sometimes the way it manifests in culture and how we experience it is very different than the way it manifests in philosophy. So you may hear some people say, well, I'm describing to you a wrong version of postmodernism. Well, I'm not. I'm telling you about cultural postmodernism and how it is a morphed view of philosophical postmodernism. And we don't have the time to get into that tonight, the philosophical postmodernism, but maybe a little bit next week we'll see. But this is what we deal with. These are the concepts and the ideas we deal with. And these are very powerful things, and it is hard to connect with someone until we understand this. So with that, it's 9 o'clock, and so I want to let you go. And if you have any questions, I know we kind of hurried through a lot of this, but I wanted to give you something to chew on. If you have any questions, come talk to me at the break. I'd love to chat with you about it because I'm sure some of this was thought-provoking. All right. Would someone like to close us in prayer?